The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And we've got Mr. Choi Hadid on the line right now inside of our Zoom session as we talk to him about being a conservationist and also his journey towards being a yoga master and so on, and finding Zen with the environment. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. Troy, how are you? Good morning to you.
Morning to you. I'm good. And yourself?
I am blessed. It's good to see you.
Nice. Hi, guys. So, I was trying to rig something with my phone, but I'm going to just rock it with my computer.
Well, you know, we are versatile like that. We adapt. So I want to briefly talk about who you are. You were born in Trinidad and Tobago, and you've lived here for the majority of your life, with the exceptions of attending University of Tampa. You are a person that loves to travel, and you got into this journey in your life where you paid more attention to your environment. I don't know if you would have remembered, but I do remember you moving into your very holistic shop, Mystic Hemp.
Yeah.
And that started. So tell me a little bit more about that journey and how you came to that point.
Mystic Hemp, you know, that was back in the day when I would consider myself more environmentally focused, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And how I got to that was when I was at University of Tampa. I used to work at a hemp store.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I learned about all the real benefits of cannabis sativa.
Mm-hmm.
And cannabis on an environmental standpoint, and became quite passionate about that. Now, what's interesting that most people don't recognize, of course, having a so-called Mystic Hemp and also somewhat wearing a lot of jewelry or whatever, it's often assumed that I use cannabis recreationally or for other usage, and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So my drive to open a hemp store was primarily environmentally driven.
And this is the direction I'm coming from, because we understand that hemp has a lot of environmental uses, from clothing to building materials and so on. Can you go more into that information, how you came across that information, and what was your drive to promote that?
You know, you're taking back years. I haven't talked about this stuff in so long. I used to just rattle off the tip of my tongue. But yeah, hemp is a versatile fabric, and fiber is probably one of the strongest natural fibers known to man. And of course, now, I mean, Mr. Kemp, you're talking, I closed Mr. Kemp in 2010, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking, that, and it was 7 years prior to that. So I think I opened Mr. Kemp in 2002. So while nowadays cannabis has a whole different perspective in social life and is far more accepted and used, back then it was not at all. But from the aspect of fabric and clothing and building materials and cosmetics and oils, it's just one of the most versatile plants on the planet, and it has so much to offer in the scope of environmental work and sustainability and whole.
Mm-hmm. And your practice of yoga, how does that, or how has that centered you in your journey in understanding the correlation between humans and the environment?
Oh, there's no difference. You know, it's so funny that we live in a world where, you know, subtly it's almost like man and nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
But man is nature. Man is part of nature.
Of nature.
Homo sapiens, men and women are part of nature. And I think sometimes we forget that. It's almost like, you know, any writing, my book I released recently, I learned this way.
Recording in progress.
Sorry about that.
Anthropocentric. Mm-hmm. And this word anthropocentric is a state of understanding that man is separate from nature, not only separate, but almost like more elevated than nature is. Like we have more of a right, more of a dominion over. And that's definitely not something I see to be true. I see that philosophy, that perspective to be so disconnected, you know, because, you know, there's a philosopher, a writer, or Noah Harari, he wrote a book called Sapiens. And he points out, I remember an interview with him, and he was pointing out that as long as something is possible, it mm-hmm. is natural, because man is part of nature.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever man can do is part of nature. It means it is natural, right? He also pointed out that not all things that are natural are life-giving. Some of them are life-taking. Because nature comes with a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that cycle is life-giving and life-taking. It's a part of the cycle of nature. And man is part of nature, you know? But with that said, I mean, I think we have to really look at our impact on the world around us. But not just the planet, as in soil and the trees and what we consider nature, but what is the impact of how we live our lives and people around us? Because
mm-hmm.
that's also part of nature. And I have a hard time now. I've been trying to bridge a gap between planet and man. And when I say man, I mean Homo sapiens, right? Mm-hmm. Man and woman. Between us and planet, like, why is it that we've created this line of division between the two? You know?
And, well, I was now just listening to what you were saying. How was it understanding the reaction of human nature towards our home, nature in itself? How has that directed the message that you're giving now? Because I understand that you have a book, you've done one. You could talk a little bit on that and the message that you have in there. But mainly, can you describe how you see humans' reaction to nature? You know, and how it has guided you on your journey?
Yeah, I'll share with you a little story I tell briefly in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an experience, getting goosebumps as I talk about it. It's an experience I remember, as simple and subtle as that experience was, I think that's what kind of shifted me to change the direction of my entire life. From focusing or trying to focus on the environment and having an environmental impact, in reality, let's face it, Mystican turned into a retail store. Mm-hmm. It turned into a ready culture retail shop. And I didn't feel that I was having the impact that I really set out to have originally, right? And I tell this story in the book. I was driving down in North Coast Road, come back from the beach or something one day. And I was driving behind a car and I saw them toss a box of kids that even go into the bush, of course. And my reaction at first was one of rage, right? How could somebody do that? How can they be so disconnected that they could just do that? Why not just keep it in the car, throw it away when they're home? You know? And I had a moment when it really dawned on me. And I recognized that individual, one, probably never had someone really tell them about the importance of the environment or show them why they should care.
Mm-hmm.
That privilege of having someone to teach you better and show you why you should do better, that's a privilege that not everyone has. More importantly, what landed for me is that so much people grew up in a society and a world that has never cared for them. It's mm-hmm. never showed them that they care or supported them and made them feel safe. Furthermore, there are so many people in our own country that struggle to see tomorrow, to put food on the table for today. To deal with the stresses of today, to provide for their families today.
Mm-hmm.
And we are asking them to care about our future 100 years from now.
that they may not even be alive to see, or their own children be alive to see. Yeah.
They're just trying to get their family through to tomorrow and next week and put food on the table and get them to school. You know, so it's what I realized in other words was the environmental approach and work that needs to be done is really priority and important. But it's not separate from the social, mental, emotional work that needs to be done.
As well, yeah.
They both go hand in hand. They are not separate because man is not separate from nature. And if we want to create a world in which people care about the environment, we also have to create a world and a society in which people feel cared for, in which they feel safe. They feel like they belong to something. And I feel like that is also part of what's lacking, not just in our world, but in our society right here in Trinidad. You know? So I think for me, it kind of gave me a doorway and a push to shift the work that I was trying to do to more work on the individual, on the mental, emotional state, on society, on community. And that's what I think shifted me the direction that I have been for the last 15 years.
And to make the connection from what you're saying to the examples that you see in life, there's been an idea or a thought process that if you can take care of something that cannot take care of itself, or have a voice to say, well, I need to be taken care of, for example, a plant or an animal, you know, you tend to understand taking care of yourself as well, because you have to be in a mental state to acknowledge, well, the plant needs watering, or the dog or the animal needs to be fed. You need to take it out for a walk, you know, and understanding the correlation between those, though very small, minute examples of nature, it does translate into the bigger environment and your social space, you know. From that, I wanted to find out from you, how much has advocacy changed, well, advocacy for environment changed since you began, you say 2010 and even before that, to what it is now? Do you see it moving in a positive way, or is it just more lip service, as one caller did say earlier today, that there's more lip service in the environmental campaigning that is happening now than really true involvement and change?
And you're speaking to the general social aspect,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny that you bring up this question now, because I've been getting ready to record an audiobook, and part of that is practicing reading. And just last night I read chapter 8, which was, it's called Beyond Accountability, Beyond Convenience. And I think the intention to want to care and want a better world is there. I think that consciousness is growing and expanding. That, you know, I remember 10, 15 years ago, you would hear people discard global warming or sustainability. That was like mumbo jumbo. Right.
Yeah, like a sci-fi movie kind of scenario that Hollywood would make up.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think people are acknowledging that this stuff is important and it's real, and we're talking about it, and we're sharing posts on social media, and we're doing little things we can do. But I feel for the majority, we're doing the things that are convenient for us to do. Like real change, real shift, real accountability to create change is beyond what is convenient. It means really looking at our lifestyles and being willing to give something up for a greater cause. Now, I want to be clear that this is also my issue, right? I'm also a culprit. I suffer from this as well. I'm not saying that I have made all the changes or whatever, but I keep trying to look to see, all right, where is my accountability or the the sustainable work that I'm trying to do. Where is it still very much convenient? Why am I still driving a truck? Why am I not taking a bus? Right? So that's, and of course there's a line of what's realistic and capable for us to do and what's really beyond our control. If I took a bus, I live in apartments. If I took a bus, chances are there's a lot of the other work that I do I wouldn't be able to.
And within the time constraints that you have for a day to get things done.
So I understand it. And this is not a judgment. I believe that every individual has to answer these questions for themselves. But we need to honestly look at our lives, our decisions, our choices, and decide, well, is this something we need? Are we aware of the impact that this is having? Are we willing to honestly look at the impact that our lives are having? Because some of us just rather not. We'd rather not actually look at it. It's easier just to talk about it. And you know what? Even that, just talking about it increases the consciousness of it. So I'm not going to condemn that either, because some of us just aren't in a place and ready to make certain changes yet. But we need to acknowledge that that's the direction in which we need to go. And then, of course, there's the fact that a lot of the time, more sustainable choices are more expensive.
So that was a point that I brought up earlier as well. I do not think, honestly, I do not think that humans or the human experience is against making that change to save nature, save a species, save a type of plant, or clean the air. I really think that the price attached to it is one of the main detracting factors of getting into that lifestyle. Just this weekend, I went to one of the car events brought on by one of the major banks, and there was the electronic car available, but the price. And then thinking of, okay, where do I recharge my battery? Is another thought, because the places that have this recharging system is one and very few, and then the distance to get to and from that. So it really doesn't make sense to get an electronic car right now, because the infrastructure and also the cost, it doesn't make sense. You know, I would love to do it because my carbon footprint would be reduced, and then I'm thinking about my children, grandchildren, and so on. So I have that environmentally conscious path ahead. If it is that we can find ways of making these choices less expensive, or do you think it needs to be that expensive? Aren't there things that we can do that does not carry that kind of price?
There are definitely things we can do personally to lead us in that direction. And here's one of them. And I've been meaning for so long to make a video about this on social media. So I'm so glad we have this opportunity here. It's real simple. Why are we still saving food and styrofoam containers? It has become apparent to me, I'm not a politician, I'm not bashing any one government or another government. In my opinion, our government, as long as I am alive, in so many ways have let us down. They've let us down. And I feel that we and citizens need to start to make our own choices. And for me, one of the things that I've decided to do many years ago, and I slip every now and again when I don't connect dots, but I refuse to buy food in a styrofoam container. I will go hungry. And if someone is serving food in a styrofoam container, I will ask them, do you have a plate I can use? And if they do, I'll let them put the food in a plate and I'll explain to them why. But generally, if they do not, and I do not have a container to give them, we as citizens need to start making a stand. The outlets, the restaurants and the food outlets we are going to that are using styrofoam, give them a buffer. Tell them, I'm giving you a heads up. in 30 days, I will no longer buy food here if all I can get it in is a styrofoam container.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very clear we have this styrofoam build that was passed however long ago. What happened to it? What's going on? I don't know. I haven't looked into it. I could be wrong, but there's still styrofoam everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I think it was more towards plastics, like for a position, somebody called in and asked me, so where do you get these metal straws? Because I talked about the conscious effort of walking around with a metal straw rather than the plastic ones and refusing. Okay, yeah. You know, when they ask you, do you want a straw? Well, I say, no thanks, I don't want a straw, because I can either wait until I get home or use the utensils are being sold like that, metal forks, spoons and knives and so on. I know of one establishment down in the West that tells you bring your own container, you order your food. They let you know, okay, well, come in for the fish. And this person is very well known for his fish. All right, and you come and you bring the container and he puts the food in the container. You know, so I think that's an idea that can be, you know, passed on along. And, of course, that leaves an industry that can be catered to, where people import, you know, the metal utensils and sell them as packages, so that you can have a very conscious way of choosing what your food is being put in. And even when you go to the office and you have to reheating in plastic is not healthy for you. So it changes that pattern, you know, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, you get to change that pattern. Moving forward, like, let's say 5-6 years ahead, where do you see Trinidad and Tobago's movement towards being a cleaner, greener Caribbean country?
I don't know. That's hard to say.
Really?
That's hard to say. I think it's unfortunate and it makes me sad. I think there are going to be things in that direction. Like you said, now we have electric cars and we have stuff like that. I think the rise of the cost of things like electricity and fuel are going to push people in that direction. But I don't think it's going to be anywhere near where it should be. I can't see that happening. I can't see that. I currently have much hope in, and again, this is not a political statement, it's not about our leadership and our opposition, with regards to the consciousness of our leaders that have been making decisions in our country. I can't say I have much hope in that sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to believe that that view would also be shared by many people. I would say, though, there is, you know, many years ago, with regards to recycling the plastic and so on, I was somewhat disheartened, right? And of course, I had a business that was recycling waste cooking oil. And that business was doing great things, and that was sold and taken over by Hadco Group, and they have now expanded. So I think in the private sector, there's a lot happening, and it is very hopeful. But outside of that, sometimes it's hard, but I do believe that the private sector is going to take up a lot of the slack that the government and the leadership of our country had dropped the ball on. And I recently was on a panel and I was made aware, you know, at one point with regards to recycling of plastics in this country, it was somewhat discouraging because they were collecting plastics and nothing was actually being done with them. But from what I've recently been told, there's actually a lot being done with plastic recycling and collection in this country. And I believe they cited the iCare program that apparently has been doing some really good things. And so maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe I look at a large scale of social consciousness and country leadership. And I can't say I see much happening on that level, but I think on a private sector level and on a consciousness of individuals level, I am pretty hopeful, because it is happening. It's happening slowly.
Well, good.
It needs to happen quicker.
Say that again, sorry?
It needs to happen quicker.
Yes, And I think
conversations like this maybe can help that happen.
And I'm thinking that more younger people need to get involved in these aspects of understanding beach cleanups and culture, the life cycle of the leatherback turtle, understanding, you know, how special the scarlet ibis is, going to a Carony Swamp tour so that they can understand how our ecological standing right now is very precocious and precarious, meaning that, you know, we need to take care of it now before we totally lose it. You know, just recently I looked into the Carony Swamp and their direction into making the scarlet ibis a 4.4 their tours, and understanding that their numbers are dwindling, unfortunately. You know, and how the conversation should be about conservation of these animals, seeing it is on our coat of arms and it is our national bird and so on. And really getting the younger people aware of what's happening. Do you think, or can you think of ways in which that can be done? Or do you know of any programs that are happening right now that will increase that consciousness?
You know, I think that question is beyond me, because I, for one, have not been very actively involved in conservation or even in the environment directly, to be honest. You know, when I'm asked that, last time I was asked to be on a panel with Ivel Yao, I haven't really done it directly with the environment in a decade almost, you know. So I can't say that I know of anything or I am one to respond to that. But I, you know, all I hear about is hunting and poaching and stuff like that as being a major issue on wildlife. And I think that's definitely something that needs to be addressed. Not that I'm against hunting or stuff like that, but I do believe that there needs to be certain laws and precautions in place as around, like they are, times of hunting and what they hunt and so on. But are they enforced? Like, we live in a society where there are many laws, but
are they enforced?
Laws are actually enforced, right? So unfortunately, I can't say. I think awareness and education is really important. In that regard, but I can't say I am the one to speak directly to that, unfortunately.
And another social issue I wanted to talk on, you are, like you said, a yoga master and very involved in understanding balance and the presence of mind. Pertaining to our younger people, do you see yoga and that practice of being aware of self very helpful in their journey? Because unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of young people acting out in anger. Can you tell us a little more how you can see that work for young people as opposed to sending them off to military camp or, you know, that kind of tough love kind of situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I will say first that I am not a yoga master. I'm a yoga practitioner.
Okay.
I don't think the practice of yoga is generally one you can master. It's like every day is a practice. You know? But to answer your question, absolutely. I think there's, there's a question that was put once to a neurologist. And he was asked, what is the most important thing that any human being, any trait that a human being can have, what is the most powerful trait or ability that one can cultivate? And he said it's the ability to regulate one's emotional state, right? It's that emotional intelligence, that ability to regulate one's nervous system. And the breath is our biggest tool to do that. It is the most powerful tool for us to be able to do that. And I think not just kids and adolescents, but adults. We have so many people walking around our society every day under high levels of stress, being triggered. I myself get triggered. And I practice yoga every day, right? But I do think that cultivation of mental, emotional well-being is so essential from a very young age. I learned to breathe at 27 years old. I actually learned to breathe. This is 3 years after teaching yoga. And this was after spending my adolescence trying to be an athlete. Mm. But never was I taught, right, that how breath actually worked. How important breath was and how breath moved through my body. And, you know, I think there are so many people that are walking around our society. One, they can't breathe. Two, they don't spend any time with themselves and their minds to create this relationship to actually look at what's coming up for them, right? Mm-hmm. Our idea of spending time alone includes this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes our TV and our device or book. But what if we actually just sit with ourselves, look at our mind, look at our thoughts, be with our breath? What if we were taught how to do that from 6 years
early on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? How different of a world we would live in, right? Because as I cultivate a more holistic, loving, compassionate, understanding relationship with myself, that relationship is the foundation of my relationship to everyone else around me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm at war internally, I'm going to be at war
with everybody
with
else.
Yeah.
Well, Troy, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to come out and speak with us. One last question. When can we get a copy of your book? What is the point you are at with producing the book and getting it out there? And yeah, when can we find out more?
Oh, the book came out last October. So the book is out.
Mm-hmm.
It's out in the world. It came out October 23. It is available at paper-based bookshops. It is available at RIK. It's available on Amazon, or you could even go to my website, troyhaddy.com, and probably by tomorrow you'll be able to buy it there as well. So it is around. Check any bookstore. It's around in coffee shops and cafes all over the West, and some in the East and South as well. You can get it at Mode Alive. You can get a book at Homeland. You can get a book at Full Bloom. So yeah, go and check it out. It's around. It's available. It's also on Kindle as well. So.
Well, congratulations, Troy, on the book. And here's to more success in your ventures ahead. And thank you so much for joining us here at Freedom 106.5 FM.
Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.
Blessings.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.